Starfleet has a right to some answers.
I had planned this for a long time now. Ever since I learned that I had Iverson's disease. Since it put me in that chair.
What did you do, Mark?
There is a planet in the Cerberus system. Cerberus 2. They say the natives there have a process that rejuvenates the body, gives you your youth back.
Yes, I've heard of that story. It's a myth.
It's true, Picard. I am living proof.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, violating the Prime Directive. Oh yeah.
Rotten to the core.
Absolutely. Cam, what exactly is our conundrum this week?
This week, we are going to hand out the only... Starfleet's Worst Employee Award.
Oh, wow.
This will not be an annual thing. This is a one-time deal.
So you're saying, though, that like somebody like, say, Reg Barkley could qualify? Or are these different kinds of Worst Employee Awards that we're handing out?
Only in his own head could he win this.
Or holodeck.
Or in the holodeck.
Yeah, bad boy.
But pursuing one would be hollow.
Gotcha there. No, we want to tackle, I guess, the best of Starfleet's bad apples. And by bad apple, I think it's kind of important for us to define that. I think we look at a lot of the conversations people are having about, say, Captain Lorca when the Star Trek Discovery premiered, and whether he follows the principles of Starfleet and the Federation. And, you know, they had discussions about, you know, okay, guy, mirror universe, right? Spoiler alert for those guys. So people are maybe backtracking on
I like that you say spoiler after spoiling it.
You know what? If you're listening to a Star Trek podcast week to week, I got to believe you're up to date with your Star Trek Discovery, unless you're destitute and you don't want to pay for CBS All Access or Netflix.
I was going to say that there's a lot of people that don't want CBS All Access, but moving on.
I really have no time for those people.
No.
So I think overall we want to look at the people that really kind of violate the principles of Starfleet. And so we debated a lot of other potentials that we'll not be addressing here. For example, Lieutenant Commander Remick, like from Conspiracy. That was the guy who had been doing
that.
Fan favorite Remick, but he had been doing that investigation in Coming of Age. And it was actually a pretty cool sequence from Coming of Age that I liked. And we were wondering what this guy's deal was. Well, it turns out he was actually kind of the invasion of the body snatcher sort of situation,
right?
Where, you know, he had been infiltrated by alien worms, taken over his body. So it's not like somebody who had given up his own principles as a Starfleet officer, or, you know, went off kind of the beaten path and down a very dark road here. And so another example, somebody we kind of hated to give up, but he didn't quite fit, was Lon Suter from Star Trek Voyager. But he was a McKee crew member, and I think he had really more of a redemption arc than most of the other characters that we're going to be discussing here.
Right, and a number of McKee characters didn't make our list. I mean, you had like Calvin Hudson from the Deep Space Nine episode, the McKee, the two-parter. You have Tom Riker. You could even say Ro Laren.
Or even Michael Eddington. And
sure.
I think what we're seeing here, though, is even though they're McKee, they're all, you know, people of principles.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think what we're seeing here with Starfleet's bad apples is that they've given up a lot of their principles.
Sure. So, like Arthur Weiser, right?
You know what? I you can see me screaming my head off and crawling on the ground right now.
Yes. Why are we not including Garth of Izar?
I think his kind of downfall came after his tour of duty
right.
with Starfleet. His mental health issues, that's when they really sprung up. So that's
definitely.
Why... and we never really witnessed him as a Starfleet officer trying to, you know, take over the ship by playing a really bad hand of cards. Queen of Spades!
Yeah, it's kind of hard to have a real discussion about Garth of Izar with no knowledge of how he performed as a Starfleet captain in terms of seeing an actual on-screen representation. We've had people say, oh, he was great. He wrote the book.
Yeah.
But we've never actually seen it.
It's a lot of theories exist, though, that
sure.
Lorca is still Garth of Izar, Gabe of Izar's. They're all saying like back around what season, episode four.
I may have liked that more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why don't we? Okay, but we're gonna have some fun with this. Yes. Cam, we've had some fun in this in the past where we do kind of brackets about pitting characters against each other. You and I will debate some stuff. We've done this with alien leaders, with some of the other officers that occupy very prominent roles throughout Star Trek.
Yeah, we did it with the Ultimate Fighter.
That was a fun one. Yeah. So why don't we tackle this same sort of way with worst Starfleet officers? These are the bad apples, the people that give up their principles. And I think once we jump into maybe the first two here in the initial bracket, you'll get an idea of what we're going for here. So,
and we should just say up front, like, this makes kind of a fun, I think, companion podcast to our Why Do Starfleet Admirals Suck?
Yeah.
I think, we aren't going to talk only about admirals in this episode, but I think if you want to hear maybe more discussion about the actual why some of these people have gone wrong or what's wrong with Starfleet, tune into that episode, because I think there's a lot of information in that one that won't be in this episode.
And we are tackling two different themes, though.
Definitely.
In that admirals, I think we often see them as either mustache twirlers or else just incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas these are people, you're going to hear me say the word principles about 14 more times throughout the course of this episode. But
right.
These are people that have really betrayed what the Federation, what Starfleet stands for, versus just being a bit of a grumpy jerk. You know, like, I would not say one Brett Anderson from the premiere of Star Trek Discovery would qualify as a bad apple, for
sure.
example. Yeah. So, Cam, let's get into it. In our first bracket here, we have one, let's just go with the big name here. One Captain Gabriel Lorca versus...
Not familiar with him.
One Captain Gabriel Lorca versus one Captain Braxton from Star Trek Voyager. And we debated a little bit about whether or not we wanted to cover Captain Lorca in this, because
he is a problematic choice. Well, I think he's maybe the most problematic on the list, but...
I would make the argument that he wasn't Starfleet. He infiltrated Starfleet. He served as a captain aboard a Starfleet vessel for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
So, but then the debate comes down if the crux of this entire podcast rests on giving up principles. I don't think he ever did betray his own principles or the principles of the Federation, because he was never somebody invested in the Federation. He was all about
exploiting them
and taking power as leader of the Terran Empire. That's what he wanted there. But he's still a fascinating character. And I think the reason why we do include him, though, is because there was so much debate before Lorca's big reveal about whether or not this guy was a betrayal of, Gene Roddenberry's principles and vision for the future.
And we also saw him making decisions on the show that would affect, the crew and their actions. Like, you can say, like, Remick from Conspiracy, we never really saw that. He was just kind of a shifty guy who wandered in and was causing problems. Whereas, like, Lorca, we saw him dealing with the crew on a personal level, making decisions that maybe, in the grand scale, were taking where he wanted to go, but they were affecting the outcome of actual missions, and the crew was behind him a lot of the time.
Exactly. So, I mean...
They drank the Kool-Aid.
He was a sweet talker.
Yeah.
So we have him paired up in one, Captain Braxton.
So, like, Braxton we first saw, like, shown up in the Future's End two-parter, but he comes back later in the episode Relativity, and he's basically gone insane, which is something you'll see on a number of Starfleet members gone awry.
I would say that he did have mental health issues in his initial appearance
when
he ended up in Los Angeles.
Poorly explained ones, yes.
Poorly explained mental health issues. And then, you're right, when he does return... is it actual mental health issues that he's dealing with, or is it just, and this is what I had an issue with when he returned, is that he just seemed really out for vengeance after this whole ordeal with the Voyager crew.
Yeah, I mean, he has mental health issues, but they're written in the way that the 90s were, where it's like, oh, he's evil. But it's because he has mental health issues. Right, it's not
a
hammered
time.
Down, they're not actually saying what is specifically wrong with him or where it really began.
But to me, it was like, it seemed his guidepost was more vengeance than anything else. And so, this is a guy, he's not abiding by, kind of the Starfleet ideals, right?
It is a bit of a bummer, though, in the 29th century, this guy is still having these problems.
Yeah, how come they aren't able to address this sort of stuff or figure it out,
Where was Daniels?
Did it throw you off, though, that it was... a different actor, in that the actor looked extremely different? They weren't even trying to cast somebody similar looking?
I will say, when I actually was doing research for this podcast episode, I had never realized they were the same character.
Oh, okay.
It had never, until I saw the name, and I was like, wait a second, that's the guy from Future's End.
Right.
And that's when it clicked.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Kim, if we have to give somebody off to the next round here about who kind of represents more of a bad apple here with regards to Starfleet, the Federation, who's going on to round number two?
Well, I'm going to vote Lorca. While I do have, I guess, sort of some nagging concerns about including him just because of the fact he is this sort of character who just kind of snuck in the back door into Starfleet in a sense and never joined. He never like signed the pledge or whatever, did the hands up, like the Boy Scout motto or whatever you want to call it, that said, I will uphold the Federation and it's Starfleet.
We are Starfleet. He had to go and say that to every single cadet that he encountered on his last day at the Academy.
Sure.
We are Starfleet.
He never did the pinky swearing. But to me, like, Braxton, what he's doing feels so outside of Starfleet. Like, he could just be like some sort of like eccentric billionaire making these decisions. Like, he's not really working within Starfleet. He's not exploiting Starfleet. He has his personal vendetta.
He's an outlier.
Yes. He's totally working on the outside. Whereas, you know, Lorca really does fit the idea of a lousy or bad Starfleet employee, because he's actually bringing down the actual structure of Starfleet. Like, what is Braxton doing to Starfleet?
It was never made clear.
Right? Like, it's just a personal mission.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, if you watch the movie Skyfall, like, why does Javier Bardem's character, what does that really say about MI6?
That they've got a horrible dental plan.
Sure.
Yeah.
But his mission isn't ultimately bringing down them.
Right.
Right? It's not speaking upon them. So that's, to me, you know, the way I look at it. Like, I think Lorca is the one who deserves to go on. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. So why don't we put Lorca on to the second round? And for listeners there, if Cam and I disagree, we're actually going to defer to the computer. The computer will be the tiebreaker here. So stay tuned if you guys want to hear more about what that actually entails. But Cam,
you're building it up to be something really exciting.
It's going to be very disappointing. I think anybody who listens to their Choose Your Alien Leader podcast, they kind of already know what the leader is.
Sure.
So anyway, next bracket here. Not nearly as big a name as, say, one Lorca or even one Braxton, but we've got Captain Maxwell.
Yeah.
As well as one Admiral Layton. So Maxwell, we know from The Wounded, Star Trek The Next Generation, the introduction of the Cardassians.
Yeah.
Where he was really on a mission to
start another war with the Cardassians.
War with the Cardassians.
Really great O'Brien episode.
And he's really going around Starfleet Command, and he really took, you know, O'Brien to hammer down and convince him to not proceed with this. And then we also have one Admiral Layton, who was essentially, again, very worried about the changelings, and so he faked a situation so that he could institute martial law on planet Earth.
Through very convoluted means.
Yeah, but we do know that
exploiting, like, young cadets.
Yeah.
Not in that way, but in, you know, in terms of having them run operations for him on the DL.
Well, it's, do you know why?
Why?
We are Red Squad.
They weren't Red Squad, though,
were they? They're Nova Squadron.
Nova Squadron, yeah.
Right, okay. Oh, no, they were Red Squad.
It was Nova Squadron in TNG, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, but
They didn't want to pay the writer who created that term.
Those cheap guys.
I know. It's hilarious,
it's
though.
So silly. But so we've got Layton versus Maxwell. This is actually an interesting one because we can kind of see that they are both trying to subvert what the chain of command is here.
And they're also like an unflashy type of, you know, I don't know if you want to say evil, but an unflashy type of wrongdoer, where
more the kind of the banality of
they are not big flashy characters like some of the ones we're going to see, or like a Lorca, for example. You know, like Maxwell, in some ways, I don't want to say he's right, but he is right that what the Cardassians are up to, where they are, like, transporting weapons and what have you.
But he's going about it. His execution is wrong.
Yeah, like, he's breaking the ideals of what the Federation and Starfleet stand for to prove this.
And do you think that if he had just gone to Starfleet and made it clear to them that Starfleet would have done absolutely nothing about the Cardassian situation?
It's possible. I think they would have probably embraced the Picard approach, which is, okay, we are aware of this and we will be watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think Starfleet would ever want to strike first.
Do you think Maxwell is sitting in prison during the Dominion War thinking, guys, come on, I told you this whole time, they're up to no good, right?
It's funny, like, there's some characters you'd like to have catch-up episodes with just to find out what they've been up to. I do wonder what he felt like later down the road, even during, like you said, the DS9 Dominion War stuff.
Yeah.
He's like, yep. Called that one.
So I agree with you. Layton, not a super flashy guy, but
no.
I might make an argument for him over Maxwell in that we see what Layton actually accomplished. And he really kind of trashed the whole I guess, structure of, you know, Federation rule and Starfleet operations, in that he convinced the most milquetoast sort of Federation president we've ever seen to institute martial law. He had a lot of influence in not just Starfleet, but the Federation itself. He even pitted the Lakota against the Defiant, the Excelsior versus the Defiant class ship.
Right.
And he was successful at creating all this paranoia and chaos on planet Earth, which in fact actually fit right into what the Changelings wanted. When he had the Changeling O'Brien come visit Sisko and say, "Yeah, there's only a few of us here on Earth, and look at what we've accomplished so far." I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, it's true. Which of them do you think had a worse outcome to what their goals were? Like, which one do you think would have plunged sort of the Federation and Starfleet into the most trouble?
I think Layton.
You think Layton?
I think that if he... Well, although, would we have gotten a Dominion War if Layton was able to institute all these policies that he wanted in place in the first place? Or was the Dominion coming through that wormhole no matter what? Because remember, he was staging those fake wormhole-like bursts? So everybody thought there's like cloaked Dominion ships coming through?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think that the Dominion also wanted to just be left alone. Like, guys, stay out of the Gamma Quadrant. That's all we're asking. And when they saw that wasn't happening, they're like, okay, well, we'll come in and we're going to take over the Alpha Quadrant. It's tough to say. Where do you come down on this?
This is tough because I do wonder, like, a character like Maxwell, if he would have just sped up the inevitable, like the whole Cardassian conflict would have just been sped up a few years.
Right.
So
But it would have been without the Dominion involved, right?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. So it would have been probably more easily conquered in the end.
Although, not conquered, but
they would have, I think,
defeated. But would the Klingons and the Romulans have gotten involved? Would it have been more of a drawn out, protracted conflict between
with
the
greater
Federation?
Costs on both ends? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. The costs for Cardassia is they killed 800 million people.
Right.
I'd probably say no. Probably. Probably not.
Right.
Where do you come down on the Maxwell versus Layton bad apple or potential worst Starfleet employee award, Cam?
Oh, I think part of the problem is that Maxwell is a much more charismatic character on screen.
Yeah.
So I'm more compelled to say Maxwell. Like, I feel more strongly about what Maxwell was doing because Bob Gunton is so good in that episode.
Yes.
Versus Admiral Layton, who's kind of a little bland.
For me, I agree with you in that I am far more drawn into Bob Gunton's performance, but as a matter of giving up principles and a matter of just the overall potential impact that this character could have had, I have to give it to Layton.
Okay.
So why don't we give it to the computer to solve this? This is how the sausage is made here. I've got a random number generator. And we'll give Maxwell odd numbers, and we'll give Layton even numbers, and we'll see what comes up. Computer, help us out. Number 6, which means Layton is going on to the next round.
Okay, so long, Maxwell. You can go back to your house.
That's, I would have been horrified by that joke, if not for the fact that I was kind of thinking about it myself there, Cam. So, we've got our next bracket coming up. And it's going to be one Admiral Pressman.
Ooh, a flashy one.
By the wonderful Terry O'Quinn versus one Ronald Tracy.
Not so flashy.
Okay, but tell us a little bit about your argument for one Ronald Tracy.
Okay, so Ronald Tracy's, he was a captain. He was the captain of the ship, the Exeter. This is in the episode The Omega Glory from the original series. Terrible episode, but he's very notable because he beamed aboard this planet, took a landing party with him, got them all infected with an alien virus, and then sent the crew back to the ship where they infected everyone else and they all died. And he stayed on the planet protected by the barriers of the planet.
I would do the same thing.
And then he was like, you know what? That's not enough. I'm going to start a war. So then he joined a faction called the Comms and declared war on the Yangs and used his weaponry to kick off a civil war.
So would you say that he's a man of his own principles of his own making, I suppose?
Well, not
as opposed to Starfleet's.
He strikes me as someone who maybe believed in Starfleet to a certain degree, but when conditions got extreme where, like, the unthinkable started happening, you know, he failed the Kobayashi Maru or what have you, he just lost his lid and just started doing what he became very, I think, opportunistic.
Yeah.
You know, when he's joining the comms and starting a civil war, I mean, I think he's pretty much lost it at that point.
Okay. I think everybody know of Admiral Pressman from the Pegasus, which one of the standout episodes from that season of Star Trek. But of course, I mean, this is a guy who has no problems using, say, illegal devices, such as phased cloaking devices, against the Treaty of Algernon,
right?
I should say. We see that he'll let a mutiny happen on his ship and really won't be able to clamp down on it. And instead, he has to enlist young, very impressionable junior officers like William Riker, for example.
Right.
So he kind of can poison the well to a certain degree as well. And then he'll leave his ship adrift, hitting those meteors and letting them sink into stone. This guy really just wants to cover his tracks eventually.
Oh, yeah. He's shifty as all hell.
So I really got to... Could you imagine yourself serving under Pressman, though? Like, kind of drinking the Kool-Aid as one a young Will Riker did.
Sort of like a Lorca situation, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely could, because Terry O'Quinn is so charismatic as this character that I don't know. That said, I would rather serve under Pressman than Tracy.
Well, who has a better chance? Yeah, who has a better chance of coming out of it alive?
Yeah, for me,
at least Pressman took a couple people out of there.
Tracy, to me, fails in two very, very significant ways. One, you know, a captain's job is to look out for the best for their people.
Yeah,
Tracy failed at that really bad. Also, the whole prime directive thing. I don't know that starting a civil war really. Or, you know, handing weapons to the comms and joining them against the Yangs. That really speaks that highly of the Prime Directive either.
What is it about these Star Trek characters that love, you know, starting wars?
I don't know.
Is that ultimately...
Well, in the episode The Wounded, which we just talked about with Maxwell, you know, there's a whole bit where Galmaset and Picard are talking about some men just want to start wars.
Yeah.
We are not those men. You know, maybe that's just the issue. Maybe sometimes in Starfleet you get these guys who just need war. It's like they get bored sitting on their hands, essentially.
The reason why I find it curious, though, is because I've always interpreted Starfleet as an exploratory sort of organization, but one that has more of a defensive, mandates to carry out. Whereas, you know, you talk to some fans and even like some people behind the scenes, and for example, one would be Nicholas Meyer.
Sure.
I always kind of thought of it more as a military organization. So you wonder if maybe some people enlist in Starfleet for different reasons. Some, like Picard, may want to explore, and others, like a Maxwell, they want to hunt to a certain degree. So.
And also, in a lot of cases, it's admirals who are doing these sorts of things, and the admirals are like sitting at home bored out of their minds.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense, too.
Find something to do other than just sitting behind a desk and moving little ships on your on your desk to say, like, yeah, let's go to the Beta Quadrant.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what's your feelings on this one?
I'm going to go with one. Yeah, it's kind of easy for me. One Admiral Pressman.
Okay, and why is that?
Because he's Terry O'Quinn. No, but right. I think this is a character who he was unrepentant with what he was doing, and he could have said no at any single point here, but he really wanted to pursue this outlawed technology, and this is at a period of time where like the Romulans had kind of fallen into the background as well, because we know that we didn't make contact with Romulans in the TNG era until the end of season one.
Sure.
So, I mean, the threat there is mostly him just seeking out power or, you know, trying to find ways to make Starfleet more powerful and then covering his tracks. The whole fact that, like, he was getting a lot of people into danger in Pegasus was because he's trying to, you know, the cover-up is worse than the crime, as they say, Cam.
Right.
So, what's your vote in this situation?
I'm going to come down on Tracy, I think.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I mean, look, Pressman wins the better character award.
Okay.
But I think in terms of Starfleet's worst employee, I think Tracy is about as low as they get.
Well, okay. So, let's give Pressman odd numbers.
Okay.
And we'll give Tracy even numbers. And random, I mean, computer... What's the answer, computer? Number 9. So it's Tracy going on. Or no, sorry, it's Pressman going on. You can tell why I'm not a computer and that I don't know the difference between odd and even numbers. So,
well, Tracy, I still think you stink.
I'm sure he's rolling in his grave,
appreciating
that comment, Cam. Our next bracket here. This will be a fun one. Well, sort of. One Commodore Matt Decker.
Right.
Versus...
Very sweaty.
Is that his most defining characteristic?
He's covered in sweat.
Yeah. Versus one Admiral Doherty from Star Trek Insurrection, who, of course...
Charisma bomb.
Yeah. I like Anthony Zerbe.
Sure.
I just don't know if it is... I think it's a bit of a thankless role.
Oh, definitely.
He's the mustache-twirling evil admiral.
And not a particularly well-developed one. He has limited screen time, really.
Well, the original plan was for Picard to have to go find, like, an old pal from his Academy days and bring him back. And then they ended up rewriting that so that would be more of Data's role. Mm-hmm. And so then they just kind of wedged, you know, Admiral Doherty in there to be the mustache-twirling admiral who's like, yes, I'm partnering up with the very obviously evil Sona so that we could violate the Prime Directive and move the Baku off-planet, and they will lose their Fountain of Youth good looks, and but they'll live in a holodeck for a long time. Okay, well, there you go. On the other hand, Matt Decker, he's a sweatball.
Yeah, this is from the Doomsday Machine. He goes insane, basically, once his ship is destroyed by the Doomsday Machine, takes over the Enterprise.
Which, it's a fantastic effect.
Oh, yeah, and is going to basically use the Enterprise against the Doomsday Machine to very... I mean, we know where that's going to end, and basically a kaboom for the Enterprise.
So for me, a lot of my debate internally with regards to these characters is who is just giving up their principles.
Sure.
Whereas I think for, you know, Decker's situations, like, I can understand why he's having like this mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. Whereas Doherty is somebody who's complicit with what's going on in violating the Prime Directive just to get this Fountain of Youth weapon for the Sona, which is... I don't know, kind of silly.
The Doherty issue is interesting to me because in some ways Doherty isn't necessarily wrong because he is thinking about the wider use of what Baku have.
They're in the midst of the Dominion War.
Yes,
you know,
like I can understand how what the Baku have could aid billions upon trillions of people throughout the universe.
Gazillions too.
Sure, gazillions as well. Yeah. It's the fact that they team him up with the Sona makes it very simplistic. Mm. Like, look, these guys are obviously evil. Look at them. You know, they're given the evil alien look.
I know. That's one of the things that we hate about Star Trek as well, is like, if an alien is bad, then they have to make them look really ugly and scary.
That movie is a hilarious example, because look at the Sona and then look at the Baku.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, come on. And, you know, F. Murray Abraham is the lead villain. He's such a, like, slithering villain that it's so obvious. So, you know... But if you replaced him with someone who looked like a Baku or whatever, like imagine the two races looked exactly the same and were not portrayed as this very obvious evil versus good, you know, look.
Sure.
Do you think Doherty would look as sinister as he does now?
You know, to me, I don't know if I'd ever call him sinister, though.
But look as much of an obvious wrongdoer.
To me, it's still just such a blatant violation of the Prime Directive. I just don't know if it was such a compelling story to tell, and I think he kind of falls victim of that. But he totally fits into that category of admirals where it's like, no, this is not what Starfleet and the Federation is about. We understand, you know... well, I'll go back to Spock. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just a student of Sarek? I don't know.
You could see, though, how a better script, you know, maybe like a polish on the Insurrection script could have turned into something really interesting.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen.
So where do you come down on this particular argument, Cameron?
I think you have to go with Doherty because I think the harm he's creating would have more long-lasting impacts. Like. Yeah. Decker, look, he's lost his marbles for sure in that episode, a big time. But what is the ultimate end going to be? He's going to destroy the Enterprise with him on it.
Yeah.
Which, in the scheme of things, it's pretty minor. It's, you know, high stakes for us watching the show and seeing our favorite characters on screen. But in terms of its actual impact, eh.
And is he an actual bad apple in that there's something kind of rotten about him underneath, or he's just suffering from severe trauma?
Sure.
And this is...
I think that's what it is. I don't think Decker was considered, you know, this terrible captain before that, because we saw his name listed on a screen in Star Trek Discovery saying he was one of the all-time great awarded captains.
But I think the other thing is that I bet that...
And I also don't think he ever made a decision. Like, I think Doherty made a very conscious decision.
Well, what I was going to say is, like, Doherty can... rationalize what sure. he's doing to himself. Whereas I don't know if Decker could necessarily do that in a cogent state.
Very sweaty.
Yeah.
Very sweaty.
It'd be hard to rationalize in yeah. that. Yeah. So are we both going with Doherty then?
Yeah.
Okay. So Doherty is moving on.
You know what dehydration does to a man. So.
Oh, I've been there. No, great story for the listeners. I have fallen victim to heat stroke. And this is when I was in a third world country. And the people I was hanging out with, they're all locals, and they just watched me drop to the ground inside a mall and, as I crawled on my hands and knees to go get, like, bottled water.
Right.
They just stared at me the whole time. Yeah. I was like, thanks, locals. You know, that you're my friends. Anyway, you can tell I'm not bitter about dehydration.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few that day.
Maybe they just thought I was doing my best Matt Decker impression at that point. They're like, oh, he's going like a method right now. So, next one here. Let's talk about a little bit more about the films. We've got one Starfleet Admiral Alexander Marcus from Star Trek Into Darkness versus one Admiral Cartwright from...
Cartwright!
You got it. Seinfeld shout out, man. From, I believe he was initially introduced in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. You see him. Was he getting sweaty with all the rain hitting Starfleet Command at that point?
He was propping up those windows like nobody's business.
Yeah. And but he also returned, played by one Brock Peters, who also yeah. played one Joseph Sisko. He also returned to be part of that cabal in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. So he's complicit with a whole range of other actors here. And by actors, I mean more like... players within this large conspiracy that involved both the Klingons and the Federation working together
yeah.
to assassinate their leaders, which, yes. That good teamwork, guys?
Right.
So for you, I'm interested in that...
They both have kind of the same outcome. They're both trying to create a war with the Klingons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Marcus is memorable in that, like, I keep going back to this because I think Bob Orsi... is a very strange man.
Yeah.
And that he's a 9/11 truther.
Yeah.
And nobody thought to stop him from turning Star Trek Into Darkness into a nice little truther story with a lot of parallels. And then he was kind of using Marcus's this kind of instigator of like the Bush doctrine.
Yes. It is interesting to me, though, that it had other credited co-writers on that script. It's like, were all of them just like, great idea, Orsi, let's go with this?
Yeah, Damon Lindelof, he loves truthers.
Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I know there was like a fight over between two of the writers versus the other two over whether you use Khan.
Yeah.
Was no one fighting over that? Like, I don't Orsi's think... themes?
Do you think that Orsi just snuck it in and nobody noticed?
Maybe. Maybe.
But
he's the one who I think they all kind of deferred to in a certain way because he was the Star Trek geek.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe that's what it was.
It didn't turn out all that great.
No, it did not.
So Marcus, he likes building warships in secret.
Yeah.
He also likes relying on ancient warlords that he discovers.
To build his weapons.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
But he must have been complicit in... Remember that attack that took place against this Section 31 facility in yes. London at the very beginning of the movie? He would have been complicit in that even though they had blamed one... quote-unquote John Harrison.
Sure. As well as the attack on the group of Starfleet officials.
Yeah, he really didn't care about his comrades there.
Can we just say...
Wait, it was Khan that shot him up, though.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we just say that what Marcus did was far flashier than what Cartwright did?
Yep.
It's tough to come down on the Cartwright side of the equation.
Well, who... betrayed the principles of Starfleet and the Federation more, Cartwright or Marcus?
I think Marcus did.
Okay. At least
and much more explosively.
Yeah, at least Cartwright was able
Cartwright the mastermind, whereas like Marcus was kind of the mastermind.
I think Cartwright was, because
you know he was?
The ones, okay, if you watch the director's cut of Star Trek VI.
This is non-canon.
I know, but it is...
wasn't it the producer's cut? Was it directors? I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, we have one Colonel West, played by Rene Bergeronnet.
Right.
He was the only other real one that we saw involved with this cabal on the Starfleet side. He was actually the one who's doing the assassination, and then they tore off a Klingon disguise and said, oh, it's Colonel West. But in the actual theatrical version, they never tear off any mask. They're just like, oh, it's a Klingon assassin trying to kill off Kurtwood Smith as the much more badass Yeah, it's still rather milquetoast sort of Federation president.
Right.
We need to improve that in Star Trek Discovery.
No kidding. These
Federation presidents. Yeah, okay. Let's be honest. I
stop trying to make this argument.
I would say Cartwright had a bit more of an arc than,
did he?
He was in two movies versus one.
That's not an arc.
I don't know. I'm trying to make some sort of argument here. Can we just move ahead? Marcus is going on to the next round, right? Okay. We're not Marcus fans, but
he's
like...
He's fine. He's thoroughly fine.
But the... Look, the Peter Weller's performance is great. He's memorable. Yeah. He also didn't really seem to care about his daughter all that much, which is interesting.
No.
Yeah, so there you go. Marcus, you are going on, sir. Cam, this next one, it's fun. Like, I'm glad that we decided on these two characters to match up against one another. One cadet, Nick Locarno.
Right.
Versus one cadet / acting captain, Tim Shepard from Valiant. We know Nick Locarno from The First Duty, and I had already mentioned Tim Shepard from the titular episode, Valiant. He's commanding.
Yeah.
The Valiant here, behind enemy lines when Jake and Nog encounter him. He's popping pills. He's going on suicide missions. It's the funny part is Nog, as an ensign, literally outranks him, but Nog is taking orders from this cadet. I think it all goes back to that whole who's in a red squad, who's not sort of thing, and Nog never got the red squad nod, unfortunately. And
right.
This is a whole red squad issue going on versus Nick Locarno. Cam, tell me a little bit about the best of Nick Locarno here.
Well, I mean, Nick Locarno is famous because, you know, when Wesley is in Starfleet Academy, they perform this deadly maneuver, which I still have never quite understood what they were trying to do.
Make exhaust fumes come out in outer space?
It's the sort of thing that, like, I think shown visually would have made complete sense, but when described, you're like, okay.
Well, no, they did show it
visually. But if we'd actually seen a flashback of it or something, you know what I mean? But,
It wasn't very cool. Yeah,
right. But anyways, the surviving members of the group band together, and Nick Locarno is sort of the ringleader, getting them all to lie about what happened.
He ultimately kind of...
He's obviously kind of, like, in many ways, like, the alpha of the group. Like, they're all kind of looking to him for guidance.
And by the end of it, he does come out and say, hey, I was the ringleader here. Don't punish them, punish me. And so the other people in this group, they all get demoted, and Nick's kicked out of the academy. So... He does have some principles there.
Yeah.
Is it good that they caught a guy like this
early? Yeah.
Like, what could Nick Locarno have done if he kept not getting caught?
He would have been the next Matt Decker.
Was that it? Was he destined to be that? I picture him more of like a...
Or a Layton?
Like a Layton.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Like...
Or would he be like a Pressman? I could see him being more like a Pressman.
Okay.
Because he is very charismatic, too.
Yeah, he's got the... Yeah, he's flashier.
Layton does not.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it, like, the reason there's so many admirals is because, like, they're so smart, they can kind of outmaneuver, not get caught throughout all these shenanigans, whereas Nick Locarno, he just didn't have the brains to make it all the way to the admiralty at this point.
Unlike Shepard.
Yeah, well...
Nothing but brains.
Shepard
is kind of like a more extreme example of Locarno, of kind of the swaggering young guy who just has all these people kind of under his spell.
Right.
With Locarno, it's in a much more, like, kind of mundane way. It's just a small group of, like, what, four or five other people. Whereas with Shepard, it's like an army, you know, a small army.
Who do you think's more rotten to their core, though? Do you think it's Shepard or do you think it's Locarno?
Oh, that's so tough because the conditions that Shepard is dealing with are so much more extreme.
Yeah, they're behind enemy lines. Yeah. I would say this, though. I mean... Locarno kind of realizes what he did was wrong. Does Shepard ever seem to admit that?
No.
Yeah. So I wonder if he's a little bit less redeemable than one Nick Locarno. They actually, look, I think in the eyes of the writers, the very fact that Nick Locarno was like the proto Tom Paris, they originally wanted like Nick Locarno to go on to Voyager, they saw that this was a redeemable character.
Yeah.
But again, these are very cheap producers, so they don't want to pay royalties to Ron Moore and Noreen Shankar for creating the character of Nick Locarno. So they created the exact same character and just gave him a different name and same actor, which is, come on, guys.
It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah. So who do you think is...
Cam,
who's a worse Starfleet employee? Is it...
I mean, okay, I'll give this to Shepard. I think he's a born leader.
Okay.
And I think the problem with Shepard is because he's so young, he's easily swayed by a situation. So if he's doing more of kind of a natural, being brought up through Starfleet in better circumstances, maybe he's amazing. Maybe he's the next Kirk, for example, or Archer, or whatever. Sure. But Locarno, I don't know. He has that natural impulse, I think, to be a little shadier.
In all fairness, I mean, Shepard was there with like a whole bunch of these cadets,
yeah.
And it was I think there's only like four like commissioned officers on this mission,
yeah.
Who are all killed, and he was by default left in command. I don't know if he would have ever found himself in this situation otherwise,
right?
And I think he would have learned and been guided to the right decisions later on if he had a longer career in Starfleet.
He's in some ways kind of like a lower intensity like Matt Decker, where it's like the circumstances are so unthinkable,
yeah.
That what he does, you know, it's tough for us to be judgmental of him, because who could imagine that? So, you know, he's obviously not as suicidal as like a Matt Decker who's just going to throw it all away. But it's that similar sense of like he's kind of been broken by his circumstances. And so I'm going to come down on Locarno. I think he's the worst employee. Because I just think there's something naturally weaselly about him that would cause more trouble in a Starfleet.
I come down to the fact that Nick Locarno tried to redeem himself, and Shepard never had that opportunity, though.
Yeah.
Like I think Shepard's just more rotten to his core, even though he's under exceptional circumstances. Cam, are we going to the computer?
Let's go to the computer. I'll back Locarno.
I'm two for two at this point.
Yeah.
And for all those listeners out there, I'm the only one who can see the computer screen. So
it's telling.
Cam's just going on faith.
Right.
Faith of the heart. And so we want to give Locarno odds and Shepard even. Does that make sense to you, sir?
Sounds good.
All right. Computer, what's the answer? Six. Evens. I'm three for three, guys.
Okay, Shepard, you're going on to the next round.
Yeah.
So long, Locarno.
Okay.
Locarno always fails and gets kicked out of everything.
All right. Okay, so Cam, another fun one here.
Yeah.
This is one, it actually came to me a little bit later, but one Captain Balthasar Edison.
Yeah.
Do you know that name?
Krall.
Krall from Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
Who we found out fought in the Zindi War.
Yeah.
He's a Mako.
Yeah,
and
he wanted war. He'd been like born to fight, basically. Yeah,
yeah. And he's going up against one Admiral Jameson. For those who may not remember Admiral Jameson, Cam.
So Admiral Jameson is in the season one TNG episode "Too Short a Season."
One of my favorites.
Yes, he was called in to negotiate basically a kidnapping situation, a hostage situation, and his way of solving it was to supply weapons to the people that had taken the hostages. And then he felt kind of bad, so he gave weapons to the other side.
Yeah, yeah,
so they could
not
fight each other.
Yeah.
And then this haunted him, and he aged, and he turned into a 185-year-old man or something. Then he found a drug that de-aged him, and he kind of just like went a little nuts. And then, you know, he's a little bit redeemed in the end, sort of, not really.
Yeah.
He's still totally a skeezball, but I don't blame anyone for not remembering this episode. It's horrendously bad. But this character is kind of comedic.
I'm
very amused by him.
I'm so happy that you actually brought this character up when we were prepping for the show, because I totally forgot about him. And then as soon as you described the real old man who goes young, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
That jerk.
He had the counterclock incident.
Because if I recall correctly, he brought his wife onto the ship,
yes,
too.
Yes, correct.
And it's like, that was creepy because of the big age difference there.
Sure.
And I was just like, oh, okay, maybe that's another...
The makeup for that guy is amazing, too.
Yeah.
Just the visual alone.
No. It wasn't makeup, Cam. That's kind of offensive towards the elderly population.
Well, there was makeup when they made him look younger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, no, he met up with the Sona.
And they had the soundtrack, you know, when you're young at heart.
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, we've got Krall from Star Trek Beyond. Well, let's talk about Balthasar Edison.
Sure.
Because this is... We didn't actually see this plot twist coming, and it really happens where Star Trek really surprises me with a plot twist.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lorca.
Yeah.
Mere Lorca. But this one, actually, I never saw it coming that they're going to introduce a veteran of the Zindi War. As
why wouldn't you expect that from a major motion picture?
He's your primary antagonist.
Yeah.
Just like... Oh, yeah.
I have never been happier in a theater for a Star Trek movie than when he said, I fought the Zindi.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
And it's Idris Elba saying that. You're like, Sure. Do you think he watched all those all of season three of Enterprise? As you know, he's like, I need to learn who these Makos are.
I like to think they enforced that. Yeah. That was when he signed on. It was like, you must watch season three of Enterprise.
He's calling up Stephen Culp, be like, hey, you know, when you were Major Hayes, you know, how did you get into the spirit of the Makos? Like, tell me, man. But pretend I have a good English accent, you know,
right.
And that's the actual Idris Elba there,
right?
So when it comes to who's more rotten at the core. The horrifying deaths that Krall subjected people to throughout Beyond, like, that to me, like, that is not the principles by which the Federation stands, is it, Cameron?
Right. Just a little slightly off.
A little slightly off there.
So,
but who do you think was a more compelling character between the two? That's the real question.
Well, let me think about this one for a while. I mean, Krall is obviously the much more memorable character, more memorable villain than Admiral Jameson, the character that people are Googling images of right now. So, yeah, I think Krall is very problematic just as a character. Someone who's just like, yeah, I was born to fight. It's like, okay, well, and?
Well, they're like, we gave him a starship.
He didn't want to explore anything.
No, he just wanted to shoot things. He's like, who gave a Mako the captain's chair?
Who's to blame more for Krall's actions? Krall or the people that put him in power?
But do you know who would have put him in power?
Who?
One Admiral Archer.
That's awesome.
Right? Like that, like, I'm just telling the truth. It was Admiral Archer's fault about this. Although no, was it because was the USS Franklin not like a Warp 3 ship? I think this ship may have preceded. No, that doesn't make sense because of the Zindi War.
Right.
I remember just being really confused about, like,
because Franklin. He would have gotten that commission after the Zindi War. So
is it also weird to think that, like, Idris Elba was just wandering around the corridors of season three Enterprise and we never encountered him once?
They need to do a special edition and just CG him into random shots.
Just like Forrest Gump him?
Yeah.
Okay. That'd be all right.
Yeah.
But he has to look exactly like he did in the early 2000s when he was filming The Wire.
Right.
And so he's just dressed like one Stringer Bell and he's speaking in that heavy Baltimore accent. Like,
right.
That would be pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. So are we agreed? It's
Krall.
It's Krall. Moving on.
Jameson wins my heart, though.
hey, yours and mine, sir. Last one here, and then we'll start having a lot of fun with paring down the brackets even more, Cam. But one, Captain Rudy Ransom from the Equinox two-parter in Star Trek Voyager, one of my favorites, Star Trek Voyager season finales and premieres, versus one Admiral Sadie from the Drumhead. She, of course, is the one that came aboard the Enterprise D, and she was looking to crack a few skulls about possible infiltration and made one particular man of mixed race heritage feel very bad about himself.
Yeah, like her crime does not have sort of the explosive kind of like she's creating a war or she's wiping out a race, but she made that guy feel terrible about himself. And you know, it's very much like a McCarthy parallel of her trying to stir paranoia within, you know, the Federation and Starfleet.
She got accusatory with Captain Picard, and it's like, do you really think Captain Picard is in bed with the enemy?
Right, like she's a very awful person.
Yeah. But it, I mean, it's a fantastic performance.
Definitely, Gene Simmons.
Before
Kiss.
Before Kiss. Yeah. Again, a great makeup that they did with Gene Simmons in this episode as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
She wanted to rock and roll all night.
Well, she had this great like star on her eye, and I was just like,
she's the star one.
No, sorry. It was the kitty whiskers.
Yeah. No, that's
Peter Criss.
Yeah, that's Peter Criss.
Okay. Yeah. Gene my apologies.
Simmons is he the demon? Is that what he's?
Yeah,
called?
He's the demon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Admiral Sadie, right?
Yeah.
Versus, of course, one Rudy Ransom, who, he was subjecting these sentient alien life forms from another dimension to extreme pain and torture in order to harvest their crystalline, their kind of crystal sort of stuff for, like, faster warp speeds.
Right.
Which, here's a guy who I understand where he's coming from. Unlike Janeway, I think his ride through the Delta Quadrant was a whole lot rougher.
Yeah.
It almost feels as if Equinox should have been what Star Trek Voyager was about.
Right.
You know, people push to their extremes, and he's like, I need to get my people home by any means necessary. But you know what? Janeway stood by principals, and she got back home just 1 year later than Rudy. So there you go.
How interesting would it be if you had, say, Chakotay being more of, not necessarily as extreme as a Ransom, but more of that type, someone willing to kind of make those decisions and have that, you know, the Janeway Chakotay kind of clashing about that sort of thing. That would have made the show much more, I think, more compelling, you know, in its overall arc.
I agree. The only issue is, like, if we have our first female captain and we constantly have the male first officer undermining her all the time, which I used
would anyone have objected, though, in 1995?
Probably not.
Yeah, but now they would.
I used to be kind of less forgiving of what they did with the Chakotay character until I actually thought about that very issue, and maybe they were cognizant of this, like, constant undermining. Although, can you think of any other captain whose orders were questioned more than Janeway, especially by the male subordinates?
I mean, Archer's were by the viewers.
Very good point, Cam. So, for you, who's a bad apple between Admiral Sadie and Captain Rudy Ransom?
Sadie is a toxic personality, but I don't think...
She believes she's upholding Federation values.
Like, she's creating paranoia in the way that, let's say, like, Layton is, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, like, what she's doing to me is not as... It doesn't stand out as much as, like, what Rudy Ransom's doing, but Rudy Ransom is kind of falls into, like, the Matt Decker thing, where he's been driven kind of around the bend by these terrible, terrible circumstances and is doing things that... I would love to have just seen a Rudy Ransom, like, prequel, like, miniseries, just to see what he was like, kind of, like, call it, like, Rudy Ransom Year One.
You know, they could have done, like, a one-off episode.
Is there a novel?
I'm sure there must be.
I would hope so.
But it'd be great, because, like, each act could be, like, Year One in the Delta Quadrant, Year Two in the Delta Quadrant. You just kind of see this, things get rougher and rougher.
Yeah.
That would have been a great kind of just out there sort of episode that they tackled on Star Trek Voyager. What was the the one where we returned to the aliens from the demon planet?
That
was a Brian Fuller script.
Course
Oblivion.
Yes.
Yeah. That's like one of those kind of fun one off sort of series that doesn't really have any bearing on like our regular week to week characters.
Yeah.
So
where do you stand? Like, I think I'm gonna come down on like Rudy Ransom because, you know, he went through terrible circumstances. So did Janeway.
Yeah.
And there was never that weakness on Janeway's part to be like, you know what, let's just start exploiting another alien race.
You're right.
For horrific means.
I'm with you there. Let's go with Ransom. So, Cam, we are done with the initial brackets, and we'll jump over here. Now we have Lorca.
Round two.
Lorca versus Layton.
Charisma bomb Layton back for round two.
I would generally think, just as a matter of principle, Layton has betrayed Starfleet far more than Lorca did, because Lorca never had any initial allegiance to it.
Sure. And Lorca was going to annihilate the entire universe.
Yeah. You know what?
He may be the worst of all of them.
That is a good point. Why? Where does Star Trek Discovery go from this? The main stakes were the existence of the universe? Like, how do they up the stakes next season?
Yeah, I don't know.
I know. A little kind of silly on the
part. I remember Joss Whedon said after the first Avengers, they were like, well, what are you going to do for part two? He said, I think I'd like to go smaller. Obviously, he was full of it, but, you know, I think that's where Discovery's going
to
have to go.
I'm sure Joss Whedon would have liked to have gone smaller. Do you think the guys upstairs would have allowed him? That was at the height of the big Marvel conflict going on with...
With Ike Perlmutter. Yeah, I think now Marvel would, but I don't think maybe at the time that was possible.
Yeah. But in this situation, I still kind of want to give it to Lorca versus Layton.
I agree.
We're down with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so Lorca's going on to the next round here. And we've got one... Battle of the Admirals, Cam.
Okay.
One Admiral Pressman versus one Admiral Doherty. This is an interesting one.
It is.
I'm struggling with this in that I think the potential consequences of what Doherty was up to are far more reaching than what Admiral Pressman was doing. But I think Admiral Pressman's more rotten to his core. I think Doherty could rationalize what he's doing to himself in a way that it's for the benefit of the Federation, whereas Pressman's, I think, really more out for himself.
Well, and Doherty, it wouldn't surprise me if the character of Doherty, if you told me his entire career had just been, like, impeccable, and in this one circumstance, his view of it was just the wrong one.
Yeah.
He was making the wrong call and he compromised himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like this was the one that just broke him for whatever reason. Whereas with Pressman, like, I feel like that's a guy who's going to commit, you know, these kind of questionable acts again and again, but always be able to justify them to himself.
I don't think this is the first time he's committed a questionable act. This is the first time he got caught.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel as well.
Are we both down with Pressman then?
I think so. Okay. I mean, Doherty, you want to keep around just because I know that all the listeners want to hear more Doherty talk.
Yeah.
But I think Pressman's the one we got to, you know, move into round three.
Yeah. I mean, he's the good looks of the podcast. So, okay. So,
sex sells.
Yeah.
That's what Anthony Zerbe has on his business card.
Anthony Zerbe or Anthony Sexe? Yeah. So, this is a fun one. It's the highest rank you can have, an admiral, versus the lowest rank you can have, a cadet. So we've got Admiral Marcus versus Cadet Shepard. Is this a much of a matchup, Cam?
No, I think Admiral Marcus just completely takes him to the mat.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. We don't need to debate that one too much.
Sorry, Shepard. You put up a valiant effort.
Yeah, I like that. Good on you, Cam.
Thank you.
Okay, next one here. Crawl versus Rudy Ransom.
Ooh.
This might be our toughest one yet, because I keep going back. Okay, so I say the word Crawl, but it's really Balthazar Edison that we are talking about here, where this is a guy, he gets this technology that can extend his life, but he has to give up his humanity more and more in order to do that. And he just, but even before that, he was a man who wanted to fight. And that's never been what the Federation was about. And
why did they put him in, like, the captain's chair?
That never made any sort of sense. Yeah. Do you know why we're struggling with this? Is because we were told explicitly he was a Mako.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think they just put the Mako thing just as kind of a fun little Easter egg.
Sure.
I think we're just supposed to think of him as, like, a regular, like, Starfleet captain.
Yeah, because to the average viewer, Mako would mean nothing.
Yeah. Although, no, but I think they kept going back to saying, like, he's a soldier.
Yeah.
He's a soldier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, why was he in charge? Like, when Starfleet was about exploring at that
like,
period.
Did he never tip them off at all? That they were like, maybe this guy isn't fit for captaincy.
But you know what? We do see a lot of mental health issues go unnoticed throughout Starfleet. Thanks, Counselor Troy.
The future is apparently very bright.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, He just wasn't somebody meant to be in Starfleet. But then we have somebody like Ransom.
Yeah.
I can kind of understand why he was pushed to his limits. But what he's doing with just kind of... These are sentient aliens that he's torturing. So are his crimes no less, you know, awful than what Krall was doing to all the crew members that he encountered from the survivors from the Enterprise?
Right. Who do you think had the...
I know who I'm leaning towards right now.
Who are you leaning towards?
Balthazar Edison.
Okay.
Because I think Ransom is doing what he can for his crew.
Right.
And I think he has reached his utmost limit, where I think the...
He also doesn't have a like really evil objective, too, like Krall did, of like launching this experimental weapon at a Federation, you know, colony.
Yeah. He's gonna kill.
He just wants to get home. It's there.
No, 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 no. He just wants to listen to Saboteur. Yeah,
I don't think he did want to listen to that.
No, actually, that's true.
That was his end.
I just needed to get a Beastie Boys reference somehow into this episode.
Right.
We're talking about. I find it sad we barely talk about Star Trek Beyond on this podcast dedicated to Star Trek.
I know.
You know.
Well, we got to this week.
But it is, like, look, I think we talked a lot about Star Trek Discovery all the time, which makes sense. We got 15 hours of it so far.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Because, like, okay, say Rudy Ransom's plan works. Like, he never runs into Voyager. He just keeps using these aliens.
Right.
Ultimately, he just wants to get home, right?
And he accomplishes that.
Yes.
And
then
he
what?
Stops killing off these aliens in a horrific manner.
Right? Does he?
Yeah.
Or is he at that point just like been driven around the bend by doing all this stuff that he's then causing problems back home? Like, I don't know.
I think he...
Like, we know with Krall that it drove him to a point where he's just now attacking the Yorktown.
Okay, but I'll say this. I don't think Starfleet was ever the right organization for Edison. I think he was somebody who joined the military because he wanted to shoot things. He wanted to, you know, blow things up. He gets a captain's seat. and now he wants to shoot other things in space and blow things up.
He would have been better as like a chief of security, like a Worf in TNG, where, yes, he often has the aggressive, you know, tactic he wants to take, but there, you know, a captain would be like, that's not the one. But when they were in battle situations, he would have been the best.
He's a Landry.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I think that's his parallel.
I don't know if that's...
No, it is. What do you mean you don't know?
No, I guess you're right.
Yeah. Shit. This is the woman who sees a tardigrade and...
But do you think Edison would have been doing that?
Yeah.
You think so? Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Let's go shoot laser beams at an alien species I don't really understand and get killed in the process.
Right.
Okay. I'm going with Edison. What are you going with?
I think I'm going to go with Edison as well, just because of what his ultimate goal was. I think Rudy Ransom just wanted to get his people home.
Yeah.
It's like evil born of desperation. Whereas like Krall, there is that element to him, but he's a guy who's wanted to fight. And then ultimately is then declaring like war. So to me, I think I got to say Edison.
Okay.
But I do think they're both very, very problematic Starfleet officers.
Yes. Speaking of which... We're getting to the home stretch here, Cam. We've got one Captain Gabriel Lorca versus one Admiral Pressman.
Round three.
Okay, so, sir, between these two, who do you think is ultimately a worse Starfleet employee?
Well, I think Lorca, probably.
Yeah,
destroying all of existence.
But my issue is, like, then are we just going to argue Lorca?
Right, because of the stakes of what he was doing. Yeah, no, you have a point. Yeah,
so then I would say let's kind of pull it back a little bit and just examine whether or not these are men of any sort of principle here. And I really struggle with Pressman. Like, I don't know if he really had any principles. If we see that he was so willing to poison his crew.
Right.
Whereas Lorca at least showed loyalty to the people below him, even in this universe that he wasn't from. And then we see Mira Landry, he's still pulling for her.
Right.
You know, and he actually had like enough support within the Terran Empire to get a bit of a mutiny going on. I know it's a bit of a stretch.
It is, yeah.
But I would say still a man who had his own set of belief systems that he held on to, whereas I don't think Pressman really stood for anything other than Pressman.
And I think we have to at some point introduce the fact that like Starfleet didn't know who Mirror Universe Lorca was, whereas they know who Pressman was.
Yeah.
They promoted him.
All the way to Admiral.
Yes.
And like we said before, like, this is not the first misdeed he did.
Yeah.
I think there's other people that had suspicions of him, and they just kind of swept it on the rug. I think he's got... Didn't he say at the end, I've got friends, Picard?
Right.
And Picard said, you're going to need them.
Right.
That's a pretty great exchange between the two.
Well, and also with Lorca, you know, he's only in this role on the Discovery for a short period of time. And already kind of people are a little onto him, like the Admiral is already like, this is not the Gabriel I knew. I'm going to take his ship away.
Sorry, how come Admiral Cornwell, the one who's all about genocide, was not in our list of bad apples, Cam? I think it's because of the way she was depicted on screen, though. It's like she's like one of the good guys, even though she's...
Well, you could make arguments like Benjamin Sisko has done some things that put him on this list, or Worf.
But it's interesting, like, we wouldn't consider Worf, Cornwell, or Sisko to be bad apples.
It's because the show is on their side to a certain degree. They can make mistakes, but the show is about them.
Do we want to go with Pressman, then? Pressman over Lorca?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Lorca snuck in. They were never really that aware of him, but they were onto him. So. Yes.
Okay. This next one, this is going to make for a good debate, because I'm not really sure. You may have to convince me what we should do next. I'm not really sure where I come down on, but Admiral Marcus versus Captain Krall Edison.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So I think in terms of just sheer scale, we see what Marcus is capable of with regards to wanting to ignite this war between the Federation and the Klingons. He's going behind the back developing, say, the USS Vengeance, you know, this warship where Starfleet's not really about warships until we get to the Sisko era of the USS Defiant, but I digress. He seems like kind of an evil dude, like comically evil.
Yeah.
Although, so does Krall
in
this situation. The thing with Krall that keeps coming to me, though, is something you seized on earlier. It's like he's just someone who just wants to fight.
Yeah.
You know,
like, does Krall have any interest in Starfleet principles?
No,
he doesn't. But You know, if we're going to talk about a worst employee, like, he's not a good choice for them to make a captain. But, I mean, Admiral Marcus is someone they promoted up the ranks who's exploiting Starfleet ideals to his own ends and to create chaos.
But doesn't he think that what he's trying to do is protect the Federation by starting a war early in order to get the Klingons while they're weak?
Yeah.
Like, I think he thinks he's doing it for... I don't think it's a very strong argument, but I think he thinks he's doing it for the best.
But all villains are a hero of their own story.
Yeah.
So...
But don't you think... Okay, so Marcus keeps getting promoted, and I think it's because he proves that he's a competent officer throughout. So if we're talking about worst Starfleet employee...
Yeah.
Whereas Krall, it just seems as if they're like, look, we got an extra ship... I know you're not qualified at all, you know, being a guy who shoots at people for a living.
Yeah.
But do you want to command an exploratory vessel?
Starfleet really needs to be called on the carpet over that one.
Okay, not that you and I are big fans of the Orville, but there was a decent joke in the first episode where Victor Garber's Admiral character is like, yeah, we've got like 3,000 of these things, so can you just command the ship, Ed Mercer, please?
Right.
Maybe it's the same situation with Krall here.
I would love like just maybe a comic book miniseries or something, just like detailing Edison's like few exploratory missions.
They all end up with him shooting the pre-warp civilizations.
He's like, they're coming right at us. Open fire.
No, I just picture every first contact like the way that we saw it in A Mirror Darkly, where like they just take a shotgun out and start blowing the aliens away.
Yeah.
I'm voting for Captain Balthasar Edison.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. The reason I guess I can justify this is because he's a terrible employee.
Yes.
For them, but he's also then like unleashing experimental weapons back on them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'm gonna have to say Edison.
Well, because like Marcus's target was not the Federation.
Sure.
He was using the Federation to, like you said, kind of exploit it for, you know, his own will, but he ultimately wanted to strengthen the Federation.
Right. Like Leighton, he had a very twisted version of what needed to be done to save the Federation. Yeah.
So, Cam, our final matchup here, we'll have a good debate about this, but it's going to be the worst employee. Is it one Admiral Pressman or one Captain Balthasar Edison, a.k.a. Krall?
I gotta be honest, I never thought Krall would be here at the end.
No, nor did I.
And I don't think many people listening would call Krall one of Star Trek's greatest villains.
But he's not a very good employee.
No, he's not.
So, look, the name of this episode is not Star Trek's Greatest Villains. It's Worst Employee.
Okay. So we both kind of given the argument for both of these people as to, like, these were, like, really kind of bad personalities that were promoted up through the ranks.
Yeah.
So... You can't even say like that there's a difference in that regard and that one has this going for them and the other doesn't. They both, I'm sure, give off several warning signs throughout the course. Now, obviously, what Krall / Edison ultimately does is far more, I guess, it's more bombastic than what...
A greater scale.
Yeah, it's on a greater scale than what Pressman's done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hard not to come down on Edison on this one. I have a hard time justifying Pressman as the worst employee over Edison.
Or him. I am still struggling, though, in that I think if we go and look at Pressman, he's a complete narcissist.
Definitely.
He doesn't believe in anything except Admiral Pressman. He's there to cover his own tracks. He can poison junior officers. And his whole line about, like, I've got a lot of friends, you know, which I love it whenever, you know, that's like Rudy.
Say that all the time.
Rudy Bosch from Survivor.
Remember,
Cam and I were big friends of reality TV series Survivor. But there's a great line where this very old former Marine gets voted off the island. He's like, I got a lot of friends, you know. Right. I like that as a threat in pop culture. He's just so odious, and
I don't think there's any argument. They're both awful employees.
Yeah. But
it's just a question of who's worst.
To a certain degree, I blame Starfleet for Edison getting to where he is. In that, like, there's, I can understand how Pressman wormed his way up the ranks, where I think it is really truly the fault of Starfleet for giving this Edison a ship in the first place. It just makes absolutely no sense. And he finds himself on this alien world with this technology that is transformative and doing some very messed up things to him. Yeah. Even though prior to this, you know, transformation, he was a guy who just wanted to, you know, shoot things up. You know, how much of that Edison is left in him? That's what I do wonder. And
how
much
has been corrupted by all these transfers of energy, essentially. Yeah.
And if we're just going by employee, Admiral Pressman's a current employee. I bet
that is true.
Edison's family got that that soldier's pension, you know, a good century ago. So is he even considered a current employee of Starfleet? I don't know.
I wish we'd seen more, like, positive portrayals of the Makos. Like, look, there was, you know, like, Stephen Culp's character was really great, Hayes, on Enterprise. Like, great character. But we never really got to see the Makos being, like, really that great.
They were
often cannon fodder.
I would have liked to have seen, like, an episode from the Makos' perspective.
That would have been amazing.
Where they're just like, oh, these Starfleet doofuses, we've got to listen to them.
Yeah.
They're bossing us around. Like, that would have been, like, a fun kind of, like, other side of the prism sort of look.
Because when they were introduced, I thought that was so cool that you would see, because you would never see that on a 23rd, 24th century Star Trek series, you know, like the original series onwards. But the fact that like an Enterprise in its early era would do this, I thought was so cool to see. And then the Makos, outside of that power struggle between Hayes and Reed, you don't get a lot of compelling stuff out of it.
Yeah.
And then really the biggest character we get beyond that is Krall.
Cam, I'm voting for Pressman here.
You're going
to
vote for
Pressman. You were leaning towards Krall. Are we going to the computer? I just have an issue if we end up with Krall as the worst employee of Starfleet of all time, because I don't associate him so much as a Starfleet officer the way I would Pressman.
You did raise a point, though, that actually somewhat persuaded me in that you said that Pressman still works for them, whereas like Krall is lost in space.
Yeah.
Starfleet's like, who? You know what I mean? Like, they're not that concerned about him at this point.
Yeah.
And he's just existing there, forgotten. So, you know, I think you have to say Pressman, because he is someone who continues into Starfleet. Like, they promote this guy.
Yeah.
And they know it. Oh, man, he's such a shady individual. I know he's not, like, the big explosive choice. I think, you know, a lot of people are...
We could have said, like, Admiral Marcus. And
sure.
Like, oh, yeah,
well, when you say, yeah, Marcus, Lorca.
Yeah.
I think I will say Pressman. Because he does to me, personify an employee.
Yeah.
Whereas Krall / Edison... It's sort of like an ex-employee who's coming back and, you know, with a vengeance against them.
So, it's final. Admiral Pressman is Star Trek's best bad apple.
Yeah.
I like it. There you go.
Yeah.
We talk so much about this character. It's finally good that we gave him his own showcase here.
And we never talk about Krall, so.
Yeah.
This was also a showcase for him.
This is the most we've discussed Krall since Star Trek Beyond
came out. I don't even think
we
discussed him that much in that review.
No, not really.
Yeah, so.
Well, hey, at least we should send a copy of this episode over to Idris Elba's people and let him know that people are still talking about him.
Sure.
Sure.
Not for any of the other work he does.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean talking about Krall, not Idris Elba?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, that's a really low blow on Idris Elba.
Wow.
The mountain between us.
I will forever be talking about The Wire.
Of
so
course.
Idris Elba does not need to worry
about
that.
And I'll always be talking about Obsessed.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Okay.
I've forgotten about that one.
So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll have... again, videos up this week, as well as I think our rankings of Discovery episodes.
Oh, yeah. You and I, we talked about doing that a few weeks ago. And,
yeah.
It
was for last week's, I think, episode. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got mine actually sitting chambered, ready to go anytime.
Do you have
it
written up?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I will do mine in the next day or so. I have four days off.
They're literally just like...
Are you not doing capsule reviews for each one?
How long are these capsule reviews?
Oh, short. Like 3 or 4 sentences.
I was thinking of 1 or 2 sentences.
Whatever.
I'll do. I guess I'll have to do some capsule reviews too. Yeah. Thanks for making more work.
You're welcome.
Cam. I thought we had given up all this added work that we had taken upon ourselves with Discovery, but I guess not. But look, yeah. I think doing episode rankings and comparing where me and Cam come down on that's it's going to be fun. Like I had fun just ranking the episodes themselves. So adding a little thoughts and flavor and explaining why maybe this episode is better than that episode. I think you and I will have fun with that.
Definitely.
So, check that out. So going to YouTube, we had a fun video on last week with regards to comparing the best first season of Star Trek to the worst first season of Star Trek. And you and I, we assigned letter grades to everything. We had a lot of fun with that video. So,
yeah, that was a blast.
I would definitely recommend
that. Might be my favorite one we've done.
And you know, I had fun just editing and putting it together because you noticed the sound effects that I was using there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh man, I was making myself giggle in front of my MacBook, which I have to remind myself that I'm in my 30s now. You know, but so definitely check out our videos on YouTube and easy to find, especially if you go to facebook.com/subspacepod. We post them all. But CSI Tech, he says, I agree with everything you said. I sort of base my estimation of a series on how many episodes I rewatch immediately. In this case, Discovery wins hands down on its first season. Another comment. This is from Trek on the Tube. We do discuss progress within these rankings from Deep Space Nine, how it's just kind of, to me, it epitomizes why DS9 Season 1 was not its greatest, but Trek on the Tube says, progress is one of those episodes where I get what they wanted to do, but it didn't work. Move along home. Sucks.
Ah.
Ha. Something. LOL. Duet is probably the one episode I would watch, so I get that.
Yeah.
And then there's also a bunch of other comments just from older videos when we're discussing whether or not Kira Nerys is the most badass character. This is almost a year ago, okay? Maybe longer. Yeah, so I love Nerys's character arc. So not a two-dimensional character. While she was tough as hell, she never seemed to let her horrible experiences turn her cold or bitter. I loved her development, and that was from Contrafax. And obviously, we agree with Contrafax. That's why we made a video all about Kira Nerys. So finally, one last comment from Contrafax. Contrafax likes our badass videos, apparently, because this is on who is Star Trek's most badass characters. I realize you and I like using the word badass in our podcast titles as well.
Right.
Maybe we're just making up for something that we are not. I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah. But with regards to our who is the most badass character video, I think it is a toss-up. While Kirk, TOS, had his moments, Sisko became the ultimate badass, but Garak always had multiple games running at the same time. You never knew what his ends were.
Right.
So, yeah, some fun comments. If you guys leave your comments here on YouTube or just chat with us on Facebook, we often read them out loud. There's often lots to get through, so make yours memorable.
Right.
And always lots of fun there.
Okay, so, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, this is something that's been chambered since, I guess, September. We're finally going to get around to doing our review of Scorpion Parts 1 and 2 from Star Trek Voyager. Just with regards to Star Trek Discovery, it kind of took us off our usual schedule of doing like once a month we would do a two-part episode review. So,
and we do have new listeners, of course, from Discovery.
Yeah.
Because that brought in, I know, a number of new people. So,
And for the new listeners, the two-part episode reviews, they're a lot of fun, and like it's been a while since we've seen some of these episodes, and just kind of diving deep into what our thoughts are now and how it's changed over the years and how well this holds up and whether it just justifies itself as a two-part episode. And Scorpion is such a fan favorite, it's going to be fun for me to revisit this one. It's been a while for me, but I think this might be the episode I've seen more than any other Star Trek Voyager episode.
Okay,
so I can't wait.
I thought it was Virtuoso.
Oh God, that was one of the most punishing episodes for the Doctor, and we're like, that episode really ruined the Doctor's character for me. In that he's like, yeah, I don't care about the crew; they don't need medical. Tom Paris can be the Doctor.
Right.
I'm gonna go sing on a planet.
Classic.
Anyways, we're not gonna do an episode review of Virtuoso. So,
okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm a Cam V as in Virtuoso Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Nick Locarno.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.